This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, December 28th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll have the first in a two-part report on the Dolores River. Then we'll hear about new funds coming into Boulder County to help fight and prevent wildfires. Chris Moore will have his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. Then we'll bring you a selection of teen voices from the KGNU newsroom. After that, we have episode 4 of the Water Under Pressure podcast from the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. Then at 9:30, Greg Schultz will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first a look at the headlines with KGNU's Stacy Johnson.
Governor Jared Polis issued 8 proclamations Tuesday recognizing the statewide ballot measures that gained voter approval during the 2022 election. The governor's declarations follow the certification of election results by the Secretary of State earlier in the month and meet a requirement of the Colorado Constitution. As part of the governor's validation, the 8 approved ballot measures became law Tuesday. Amendment E, the measure that extends a Colorado property tax exemption to Gold Star spouses, was the most popular with voters, which gained 88% of the vote. 3 measures passed with less than 55% of voter approval, and those measures include Proposition 122, which allows the personal use of psychedelic mushrooms and the licensing of healing centers using mushrooms for therapy, Proposition 123, which requires the state to dedicate $300 million to affordable housing programs by exempting funds from an automatic taxpayer refund mechanism, and Proposition 125, which authorizes the sale of wine in grocery stores. According to statistics from the Secretary of State's office, turnout among the state's active registered voters was just over 2.5 million, or about 67%, and turnout among the eligible voting population was around 59%. The Denver International Airport continues to grapple with a logistical bottleneck of flight delays nearly a week after a winter storm blew through the region. As of Wednesday morning, the website flightaware.com shows DIA at the top of a worldwide list of flight cancellations for both departure and arrivals. Southwest Airlines continues to be the largest contributing factor to the flight cancellations. The airline's flight cancellation streak has created long lines at ticket counters and frustration for stranded passengers. The airline Wednesday morning accounted for more than half of Denver International Airport's flight cancellations. Since Thursday, the airline has canceled over 10,000 flights and has scrubbed more flights for today and Thursday. Federal regulators are beginning to investigate why the airline is lagging behind other carriers in recovering from the winter holiday storm that created havoc for travelers since last week. The Denver Post spoke to aviation analysts who say Southwest Airlines uses a point-to-point routing system, a non-hub configuration that experts say makes the airline vulnerable to massive storms such as the sub-zero weather and storms that hit the country last week. The Wall Street Journal has also reported that Southwest uses an outdated scheduling system for flight crews, resulting in the airline not being able to track dispersed crews as cancellations mounted. Colorado is considering changing its red flag law after the mass shooting at Club Q in Colorado Springs. For Kaiser Health News, Markian Horlick reports.
After the nightclub shooting that left 5 people dead, Colorado's governor wants to strengthen the state's red flag law. Red flag laws allow judges to issue extreme risk protection orders. Those orders allow a judge to remove guns from people who are a threat to themselves or others. Police or family in Colorado can petition a judge to issue a protection order. But that doesn't happen very often in communities where sheriffs believe the law steps on Second Amendment gun rights. Now Governor Jared Polis is asking if other people should be eligible to file a request. In some states, healthcare providers, schools, or district attorneys can request that guns be taken away. Advocates who want to stop gun violence are pushing locals to use federal dollars to teach people the legal ins and outs that can lead to a successful red flag petition. This is Markian Horlick for Kaiser Health News.
The reign of the 75-year-old Tri-County Health Department is set to end New Year's Eve, leaving the counties of Arapahoe, Douglas, and Adams to operate their own health departments beginning January 1st. In late summer 2021, Douglas County commissioners decided to split from the three-county health system after county officials had disagreements with the health agency over mask mandates, vaccination requirements, and other health orders during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Douglas County withdrawal forced Adams and Arapahoe to follow suit. Douglas County officials say the decision will save their county money. For Adams and Arapahoe, health care budgets will increase in order to serve the diverse needs of residents. According to the Denver Post, regulation differences are also forcing Archuleta and La Plata counties in southwest Colorado to go their own separate ways by dissolving the San Juan Basin Public Health, with each of the two counties needing to have their plan in place by January 1st, 2024. Lafayette City Council voted last week to commit to an interest-free $495,000 loan to help Mountain View mobile home residents purchase their 34-unit park near the southeast corner of East Cleveland Street and South Burlington Avenue. In an effort to buy the mobile home park, residents formed La Luna Community Cooperative, which has partnered with the nonprofit affordable housing organization Thistle. According to the Daily Camera, the co-op requested city assistance for the purchase and are currently negotiating with the property owner to buy the land. The cooperative's aim for residential acquisition is to create long-term affordable rent rates for the residents. The letter of commitment by Lafayette states the loan is forgivable subject to future city appropriations and that the cooperative will need to enter into a loan agreement with Lafayette and purchase the park by November 1st, 2023. For today's weather, the National Weather Service says skies will be cloudy with showers likely to occur around 5 p.m. for Denver and Boulder and a 50% chance of rain in the afternoon hours for Fort Collins. Boulder could see snow accumulation before nightfall. Today's highs will range from 50 to 54 degrees. Tonight, snow is expected after 8 p.m. for Denver and Boulder with accumulation heavy at times. Fort Collins has a 50% chance of snow, mainly before 2 a.m. Tonight's lows will range from 22 to 24 degrees. The National Weather Service says there is a lot of uncertainty with regards to snow amounts in the Denver metro area and the northern I-25 corridor because of the initial rain. Snowfall amounts will range from a half an inch to nearly 6 inches. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. For much of the last 15 years, a working group in southwest Colorado has been putting together legislation to conserve the Dolores River. In the first installment in a two-part story on the project for Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KOTO's Gavin McCoff reports.
The Dolores River starts high in the San Juans, southwest of Telluride, passes through Dolores, Colorado, where it fills the reservoir at McPhee Dam, and from then on trickles north through hundreds of miles of desert, meeting the San Miguel River and feeding eventually into the Colorado. Those who have boated it say it's a river like no other.
You start and you below the dam at Bradfield Bridge, and you head into the Ponderosa Gorge, which is this, you know, big canyon walls and these amazing, majestic ponderosa pines, and start to see more and more of the kind of red rock coming out. And, you know, you transition down into less trees and more red rock canyon wall and down into the wilderness study area, and at different places it opens up more. And it's kind of this ever-changing landscape, but sort of the majesty of it really never diminishes.
That's Amber Clark, the director of Dolores River Boating Advocates, or DRBA, which promotes stewardship and recreation along the river. Bob Gleason of Telluride sits on the Boating Advocates board and speaks of the serenity of boating the Dolores.
If you get down beyond the sections that are typically run right there, you're there completely on your own. When you're going slick rock to bedrock, you've got all these huge meanders in the rivers with these gigantic cliffs, and the horseshoe bend that you get inside that section right in there are just, you know, so unique and so untouched in those areas in there. And, you know, you could do that for 4 or 5 days and never see another person.
Here's Clark again.
It's just a really special place. And I don't know. It's one of those things that if you've been down there, you kind of know and understand that feeling, but it's definitely a landscape and a place that really kind of grabs you and doesn't let go.
The DRBA is one of dozens of stakeholders who have been working to protect the Dolores as a National Conservation Area, or an NCA. Based on those efforts, legislation to form an NCA is currently being considered by Congress. Some rivers are protected by Congress under the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act, but protection as an NCA is less controversial, especially amongst agricultural interests. Al Heaton, a cattle rancher in Dolores involved in the conservation effort, explains his view.
And Wild and Scenic comes with some rules and regulations, some laws that are pretty dramatic and would affect a lot of things, private properties and various things down the river. Of course, grazing could continue in a wild and scenic setting, but it could also be further restricted. So I felt like there had to be a better way.
For conservation groups, giving up the wild and scenic designation to pursue an NCA was a compromise, but it came with lasting protections, says Clark.
You know, it is a compromise where wild and scenic suitability will no longer be looked at. But one of the really important things that the legislation does do is maintain, you know, no new impoundments on the river, so no new dams.
Jeff Wyden is a longtime conservation advocate based in Durango with the Wilderness Society. He explains how the ban on new dams on the Dolores goes even farther.
One of the significant things, there is language that says if there's something proposed even outside the area, the NCA, the wording is unreasonably diminish the values within the area, that it wouldn't be allowed. So in other words, if someone wanted to build a big dam upstream of the NCA and it would just dry up all the water in the NCA or, you know, in other ways harm the natural values, they wouldn't be able to do it.
The NCA would also prevent new mining operations and road building in the area. But to understand the significance of preventing new dams, you need to understand how they change rivers. In 1985, a dam was completed on the Dolores, forming the McPhee Reservoir, which irrigates area agriculture. Heaton remembers a time before the dam.
Dam controls the river now. You know, it isn't like it used to be. I can remember the river before the dam was in and completed, and how the heavy runoff in the spring and various things, but that's all more controlled now.
Hattie Johnson with the Recreation and Conservation Group American Whitewater says water in the Dolores is now determined almost entirely by releases from McPhee.
The river is more or less, you know, a few other tributaries coming in, but more or less completely regulated by McPhee Dam. And the presence of water really depends on releases from that dam. And that only happens when basically the reservoir behind McPhee Dam is pretty much going to overflow.
Given the drought conditions in the West, boaters as well as native fish and plant species have seen less and less water in the river over the years, says Johnson.
Actually, in the past two summers, we have seen gauging stations on the Dolores hit zero CFS, so totally dry, no water in the river. We haven't had flows released from the dam for boating since 2019. And with our extreme drought conditions that we are seeing right now, to get the conditions to boat the Dolores, it's feeling further out of reach, I would say.
The protections would do little to release more water from the reservoir. Between drought, historic agricultural water rights, and the dozens of interests involved, coming to an agreement on how to conserve the Dolores was often contentious. Here's Wyden.
It's incredibly complex trying to crack this nut, trying to figure out, like, how can we protect the river and not hurt agriculture and do things on a voluntary basis. And the legislation that we came up with is about as close as you can get, in my opinion. But it took a decade and a half to get there.
For KOTO, this is Gavin McGough.
The Department of the Interior announced earlier this month that it will allocate $228 million towards a program that will help states fight and recover from wildfires. Colorado will receive $7 million of those federal dollars. The announced funding comes from the 2021 Federal Infrastructure Bill, which allows the Interior Department to spend $1.5 billion on wildfire mitigation over the next 5 years. Boulder County voters also approved another source of funding for wildfire mitigation efforts in the form of a new tax. KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better spoke with Boulder County Commissioner Marta Luachamin about the new funding sources.
The ballot measure 1A will bring about $9.5 million to Boulder County, thankful to the great generosity of Boulder County voters who've said wildfire mitigation is critical. So if you think about that number compared to $7 million for the state of Colorado, we still need federal assistance. We still need federal help. We need the state of Colorado to support the work that needs to be done, not just in lessons learned, but the mitigation, the planning, because the suppression at the other end of wildfire mitigation or wildfire is extremely expensive. We have spent $33 million as a county just on the Marshall Fire. That's not talking about our previous Four Mile Canyon fires, the previous Sunshine Canyon fire, the previous Calwood fire. So just to give you an idea of the need and why it's important for advocacy and what we're doing here in the commissioner's office, not just as commissioners, but also with our policy team and what we'll be continuing to do in this upcoming legislative session.
The federal funds that are assigned now to the state of Colorado, $7 million, and these are going to go towards 50 projects. How can we, the common person, get ready for the reality that we have more climate emergencies?
What's our personal responsibility? How can we personally react after the shock and the horror and the different types of traumas that folks are feeling? If I look at the data from, and the number that I got before this conversation was from February 2022, that question of underinsurance, because we hear that from folks about the biggest concern about underinsurance. Once we started doing assessments and tallies around the Marshall Fire, both in the town, the city, and also here in unincorporated Boulder County. And that number is really about 30% of community members who were directly impacted and their homes were destroyed had enough insurance, were fully insured. So what does that mean? It means that we have folks who aren't insured that as a, what can anybody else do right now? A business owner, your car owner, your health insurance, your life insurance, and your home insurance. Nobody wants to pay insurance. And nobody wants to live in the what if something happens and the reality of where we are in the climate that we're seeing. And so what's our personal responsibility? That's one of those pieces that people can review their different insurance policies to plan, which unfortunately is just one thing that people can do, to ask those questions, to talk with their neighbors, to talk with their family members, and just check in and ask, hey, when's the last time you had your insurance policy looked at and reviewed? And was it for you or was it for that insurance company's benefit? And we can ask those hard questions as consumers, as owners of assets, and to activate, because it really does create an activation of an emergency management team to address this extreme weather that we're facing.
Commissioner Marta Luachamin, thank you so much again.
Thank you so much.
For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo-Better.
And now Chris Moore shares his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. Make them hear
you. This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. We can be grateful for the warmth, friendship, and love of the holiday season, but for Afghan refugees, it can be a cold winter indeed. Now that the war in Ukraine is getting all the headlines, the war in Afghanistan is literally last year's news, and the efforts of the United States to help those who helped our troops in that war are now being abandoned. Last year, when the U.S. suddenly pulled out of Afghanistan, the Biden administration organized one of the largest and quickest airlifts in history. Some 80,000 Afghans were flown to U.S. military bases in record time. Many of these people had served as employees of NGOs, translators for the U.S. forces, or who fought alongside them, and they were destined to be particular targets of the revived Taliban regime. In those days, many got special immigrant visas, and Biden instituted, quote, Operation Allies Welcome to help smooth the transition to these war refugees. Sponsorship cities lined up so ordinary citizens could help in their resettlement. But thanks to bureaucratic red tape, 70,000 of these 80,000 Afghan refugees remain in legal limbo, unable to get green cards to start working. Their status of humanitarian parole expires in 2023. The special immigrant visa program is terribly backlogged and will not be able to process the many visa requests in time. We are not keeping our promises to these Afghans. That is being noticed by our allies around the planet. Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota sees this as a humanitarian crisis, a broken promise to our allies, and a security threat to our country. It's a terrible psychological blow to U.S. veterans of that war, and even more of a blow to the veterans who have actively been trying to help their Afghan friends for the last year and a half. And as for security issues, American-trained military personnel still stuck in Afghanistan are now being recruited by the Russians to fight against Ukrainians. For all these reasons, Klobuchar has submitted the Afghan Adjustment Act, Senate Bill 4787, to the Senate for consideration, quote, to provide support for nationals of Afghanistan who supported the United States mission in Afghanistan, adequate vetting for parolees from Afghanistan, and for other purposes. Since the U.S. no longer has an embassy in Afghanistan, the bill would create an office to offer the same services to Afghans as an embassy would. It would create an Afghan refugee strategy with top American diplomats and military personnel. It would study the viability of air transport for individuals still in Afghanistan. They would not be subjected to numerical limits on how many Afghans could apply. It would reduce visa processing time and hire on more people to process the backlog of visa requests. It would implement a more thorough vetting program with criminal and terrorist background checks, biometric information, and other clear standards to be implemented by the Department of Homeland Security. If you have opinions on the Afghan Adjustment Act, Senate Bill 4787, you can contact your senators. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Time now for Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. It is almost the new year, and every year I like to make a resolution for each chakra. You know, those wheels of light that you see in all those yoga pictures. And so here's a few ideas for you. Red is about safety. What can you do this year to feel safer? Maybe take a self-defense class, create a first aid kit, learn more wilderness survival techniques, or do more security for your home. And of course, we could always eat more red-colored foods like watermelon, tomatoes, and things rich in lycopene. Red beets. Orange is about relationships. Who are our real friends? Are there people we want to connect with that we haven't reached out to in a long time? What can we do to sweeten our relationships? Maybe a tantra workshop or couples massage, or even just going on a vacation with your beloved. And also think about the people in your neighborhood. Maybe there's people you want to thank for their kindness. Always a good idea. And of course, we could eat more orange foods like pumpkins, sweet potatoes, and carrots. Yellow is about our commitment to what we eat. Maybe this is the year we say, I'm going to see if going off gluten helps, or going off dairy, or try eating more plant-based, or making a commitment to eating a salad every day, or not eating late at night so we don't put those unwanted pounds on. I think that this is a really important thing. It's not just about weight. It's about what can we do to have optimal health. And I love the idea of starting our day with lemon and water. Green is about how can we live more green. Maybe you are going to really this year not buy anything that is polluting, that has those poisonous ingredients that poison our air and our water. Maybe you're going to start a compost or recycle something you weren't used to recycling. And of course, eating greens every day is a great idea. Blue is about using our voice to maybe use less profanity, to speak more affirmatively, to speak the truth. Is there something you would like to teach others? Maybe you want to use your voice to be on the radio or write a letter to the editor, or just reach out and speak your truth and create art. Indigo is about enhancing your intelligence. Pay attention to what you read and what kind of movies you watch. And of course, indigo and violet are very close, and that includes purple foods like plums and acai and grapes. And then violet at the top of our head is about having a spiritual connection. What do you believe in? You never know when your time on this earth is done. So give a little attention to our spiritual as well as our mental and emotional body. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, Alexis Kenyon, Gavin McCoff, Rosanna Longo-Better, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment about what you heard on KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. Stay tuned for a selection of stories featuring youth voices who have come through or volunteered for the KGNU newsroom in the past few months. After that, we'll bring you episode 4 of the Water Under Pressure podcast. That's coming up after the news headlines from the BBC.